Hello and welcome to Artists Soar. This is a podcast for artists by three artists. We discuss all aspects of being artists, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The goal of each podcast is to provide solutions so artists can focus on their creativity and soar above. I'm Rachel Harshenko.
Jules McCullough.
Stephanie Weaver.
Sometimes the things we can't change end up changing us. So hello, everyone, and welcome back. We've been gone for a little while. We've been on a little bit of a hiatus. And there's a lot of different reasons why, but we're going to kind of delve into that in this episode. So this might be a little bit of a long one, but I'm Rachel.
I'm Stephanie Weaver.
And Jules McCullough.
So let's get into it. We've had a lot of life changes this summer. And so for Stephanie, you've had a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of redone your whole schedule.
Oh my God. I'm still trying to find a schedule.
Yeah, exactly. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what's been going on?
Okay. So yeah, I guess it was about March of this year, I started trying to go back and do the life, I guess, that I used to have, where I was a program manager for software implementation. And one thing kind of led to another, and I got a really amazing job and opportunity to be a program manager and focus on the things that I love, which are projects and process. And so, I mean, if you guys have been following me for a while and you've been on my website, you know I'm all about like processes and
spreadsheets.
I'm living in spreadsheets and like almost, you know, 5 days a week. And it's just been, so that's been significant. And because of that, I've also changed my art business to be more focused on, I guess, the art side and less on the business side. And so I'm slowly making things that I used to charge for free on, I'm now making them free on YouTube so that I can get away from like the membership side of things. Cause I know we talked about that before where I felt like I was being part of the problem of all this like tribal knowledge and you got to pay me to get my knowledge. And it's just, it's not rocket science. It's really not, but it's not easy either.
And so it wasn't comfortable for you. You didn't necessarily want to be in that position.
Yeah.
Where we're more of a community of sharing information than necessarily charging for information. But to make a living, you had to make a choice.
Well, and as expensive as things are getting.
Yes.
And if you've read my article about recession and the things that we need to do for a recession, getting a job was one of those. And I've got a kid that's 17 that's going to be going to college here in, in 2 years. Yeah, he'll be a senior next year. And then a daughter who has extremely expensive taste and who is a freshman this year. So we can just kind of see the future and what it's going to hold for us. And it just made sense. And plus that combined with my kids being almost 15 and almost 17, they don't need me that much anymore. And so I started having to find my own life again that didn't revolve around being a taxi driver all the time. And do something that, while I love the art business, I love the art, and I'm never going to give up the art. I'm actually going to pursue more of my art and making it what I want it to be, rather than focusing on everybody else's art, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. Because you were kind of in that role. You really embraced the role of teacher, mentor.
Yeah.
And, not everybody wanted that.
Yeah, not everybody wanted that or appreciated it. And that was another part that really kind of motivated me. Because when I was interviewing with one company that I now work with, I'm like, man, you guys need me. Like, you need me. Nobody else needs me. And so it worked out really, really well. And they still need me. Bless their hearts. So I'm so happy. But like I said, I'm still trying to find a schedule. And oh my gosh. And then the other big changes, we're moving from one studio at Low Mill from the third floor down to the second floor with twice as much space. And my
yay!
I know it's going to be so amazing.
It's going to be great.
It's a beautiful space with great lighting.
Oh, the lighting, the two huge windows. So excited about that. But then also my mom is going to be joining me in the studio. She's been juried in a little mill and we've been talking about doing this for years. So if you can imagine like me plus my mom and then my daughter, who is also, we're all very high energy, lots and lots of ideas. We are freaking exhausting together. Like we wear each other out.
Yeah.
Right. You go away needing like a 2-hour nap.
Oh, yeah. It's so true. I went home yesterday from them and I took a nap.
Yeah,
I believe that.
Oh my gosh. But we're going to be the Sanderson sisters for Halloween. We're going to.
Oh my God.
We've already bought all the outfits. So there's been lots of like, lots of good, lots of shifts, but I'm still trying to figure out like a schedule.
Yeah. Oh, so you dressing up. So Low Mill does
trick or treat.
So that's why you're dressing up because they do Halloween there at the mill.
Yeah, we've even practiced that walk where the three Sanderson sisters are next to each other and they're trying to go off and smell for the kids.
Oh my gosh, that's going to be so cute. We did that
walking into the at-home store.
Oh my God, that's going to be so much fun.
That's going to be so adorable. There's been lots of good stuff, but it, like I said, like I'm dressed right now to go to the gym after we're done with this because I haven't been able to figure out where I'm fitting in health.
And, right.
With
everything else.
Yeah, the new schedule. New schedule's kind of
taking a while.
Yeah, it takes a little bit to get used to.
Well,
yeah.
Let's say I started the job in April and it's now September and I still don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Schedule wise. So
getting back to April. So we're going to shift over to Julie. Julie has some news and information about really one of the main reasons why we sort of put this on sabbatical.
Yeah.
And you went in for a routine gallbladder surgery.
Correct. I went in to have my gallbladder removed. Simple procedure. Didn't really even tell a lot of people about it.
She didn't even tell me.
Which I can't believe I didn't tell you. I was just like, but it was just one of those things where it's like, okay, this is, laparoscopic surgery number 15 or whatever. And, I'm an old pro at this, so it's in and out. It'll be fine. And
you thought you were going to be taking pictures.
That's right. Because that was the prom weekend, too, was the next day.
And I was out of town and you were like, oh, I'll be fine. I'm going to be taking pictures. I'm like, really? OK.
Yeah. Which I've had plenty of laparoscopic surgeries. If after this summer, I think I've had 22 surgeries now.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Which is not something to be proud of, and I'm not proud of it, but it is what it is. So, I went in for routine and got a surprise of a lifetime that I had cancer. And that took us down through, at the same time, our son, which is why I was going to take pictures, is a high school senior and getting ready to graduate in the end of May. And we couldn't tell the kids yet because we didn't want to ruin that, all that his senior time. Stuff and his time. This was supposed to be about him.
Well, plus you didn't know how serious everything was.
We didn't know exactly what kind yet.
Yeah.
No, we were getting tests.
Yeah. Lots of tests in May. Lots of another procedure in May to figure out exactly where the cancer was by the actual surgeon that did the big stuff. But
find the origin.
Yeah, they had to find the origin first, and then they were able to refer me out to the appropriate oncologist surgeon. And that happened to be at Vanderbilt, which is about 2 hours north of us for where we live. And in June, middle June, I had what is nicknamed the mother of all surgeries to remove the cancer and have internal chemo. And then from there, it's been a long recovery. We're in September now, and I'm finally beginning to feel like myself, still sore because I haven't done a lot. So now I get all these muscle aches and pains.
I would like to take a minute. Like, explain the mother of all surgeries. Because
Well, yeah, I was going to go back and say, let's tell them what kind of cancer.
Okay.
And then kind of walk through what kind of surgery you were going into.
Yeah.
Or what we thought you were going
right.
into.
Right. So the cancer is, let me think about how to say it. Appendiceal mucinex endocarcinoma. It's extremely rare. There's about 1,000 cases a year of this type of cancer. I can't remember if that's worldwide or just in the U.S. I think it's worldwide, but I don't remember. It is increasing, but there's very, very little research. And then the doctors that can treat it, the oncology surgeons that can treat it, are rare as well. So in Alabama, there's no one that can treat it. That's and do what is now the gold standard for this type of cancer is what they call cytoreductive surgery, CRS, or also known as the mother of all surgeries. They cut you open from your breastbone down to your privates, open you up. And if you can think of a turkey or a chicken, and you have this thick layer of fatty tissue that's called the omentum below your skin and muscle in your abdomen that's protecting all your organs. The cancer was in all of that. So they remove that. Then they remove any organs that are got cancer. So in my case, I lost my appendix. I lost my last ovary. They cut away part of my liver. And then for the rest of the cancer that's present on other organs, they will peel. So if you think of a chicken or turkey, there's that really thin
skin.
It's like,
I picture like a sausage and you peel that.
Yes. The casing. Off. It's like the casing over a sausage. That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's exactly. And you get the same thing in a turkey and a chicken too. Well, we have the same thing in our body. And it's wrapped around our organs. So anywhere there was cancer, like the top, the small bowel had some at the top. My diaphragm had it. So they peel that away with their hands. They sit there and they peel it. My procedure ended up being 14 hours from, from beginning to end. I don't really remember much from that day. Needless to say.
It was 14 hours, 17 total.
Okay. So there was a lot for them to do during that time. Then they basically give you a radiator flush with
hot chemotherapy.
And that's for 90 minutes. And then they clean that off. They flush that with, some sort of clear saline to get all the chemo out afterwards. And then they go back in and they look again to see if there's anything else during this time frame. You wake up with an NG tube. I woke up with an abdominal epidural, a JP drain coming out of the abdomen to drain the fluid, as well as I can't even think what it's called now.
The thingy up your nose or down your throat?
The NG tube was down my nose, and then your urine, your typical urine bag and all that.
Yeah.
And then I ended up spending the average time in the hospital, believe it or not, is only about 7 days. I spent 12 days.
Mm-hmm.
So that was basically my June. Was stressing before the surgery about the surgery and the cancer. And we had finally told the kids after our son graduated. And so dealing with that. Figuring out, how we were going to handle this because it was 2 hours away and all that good stuff. So that was my June. July was spent recovering. I finally made it home on July 2nd or 3rd.
I think your surgery was June 19th.
Yeah. And then I made it home that first week of July. Mm-hmm. I returned. The whole podcast story in itself, but I returned back to the ER in mid-July because my colon went to sleep. Oh, that's the other thing. I had 10 inches of my colon removed. as well as part of that cytoreductive surgery.
Yeah.
And so my colon went back to sleep in mid-July. So an ER visit here locally, and then an ambulance ride to Vanderbilt for another ER visit until they found a room, and 4 or 5 more days in the hospital. But
they ended up giving you some great fluids and medication.
Well, I had
everything.
A UTI as well. And that was really severe UTI. And so that was kind of what they think was the culprit of the whole thing.
And I think so too.
All of this is normal too.
Yes. The UTI is not normal, but the colon going to sleep is very expected and normal. So I've gotten quite the education on staging and grading of cancer. Basically, I'm a stage 4, but prior to the surgery, all the biopsies were grade 1. And then some miracle happened, and the biopsies, there were 15 of them, all came back as grade 0. So after the surgery. So definitely some blessings. And that led me to not needing chemo after the surgery, systematic chemo. So long story, that's why we took a sabbatical.
Yeah.
We had a lot of stuff.
She was the reason we took a sabbatical. It had nothing to do with me. We were like majorly, majorly, majorly worried.
It was one of those moments where you just kind of go, you know what? The podcast can wait.
Yeah.
And not that we don't love you guys out there, but, you know, I think all of y'all would have done the same thing. And
It was one of those things that, like, what else could we possibly talk about?
Right. You know? Right.
This was life consuming.
Yeah. It was very much life consuming. It was very, I ended up having to give up some work because I could not find the brain power to focus and concentrate on it, because everything, every turn led to another question that, you know, somebody you would hope would be able to answer, or you could find information on. It was all, that's the greatest way to put it. It was very much life consuming, and all the emotions going through it.
Yeah.
All well, I'm trying to, my son's getting ready to move 10 hours away and graduate from high school. And
well, and that's the other thing in the middle of all this, like, your son, I don't know if we want to name names, but anyway, I guess anyone can figure it out. But anyway, JP like graduated high school and is going to school in Chicago.
Yeah.
And in the middle of all that, you guys had to, you know, like, you moved him up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moved him up there in beginning of August.
And you were able to go.
Yeah, that I was able to go. I was not able to go for orientation in July. And when I was back in the hospital in July, I was supposed to be taking my middle daughter to Rock the South for 3 days. So my husband, who doesn't like country music, ended up taking her.
It was funny because
he had
a wonderful time.
Yes.
And it was like quality time with the middle child, and he loved it.
Yeah,
and he wants to go back next year.
Yes, he wants to go back as a family next year.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah. So, I mean, it was, he ended up having a really good time, but that's right. Rachel ended up having to come to the hospital with me because he couldn't, it was Rock the South. And he had something that he couldn't miss for work.
Yeah.
And I ended up going to the ER on a Monday
JP
night.
JP was taking care of Catherine.
In fact, my son came up to get me from the hospital when I was discharged because John couldn't. And so it was quite the organizationally challenged there.
We need to do a whole podcast just about your second ER visit.
Oh my God.
At Vanderbilt, because that was one crazy.
That's why I said
whole day.
That was crazy. I basically spent 24 hours in the ER from when I arrived at the Madison ER to when I got discharged from the Vanderbilt ER to a room.
Yeah,
it was 24 hours.
God.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in a hallway watching people throw up and poop themselves.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. It was quite
the low key version of what these girls said.
So if you remember basically the show ER from the 90s,
that's basically what it was.
Show put it on steroids, and that was what I was sitting in the middle of.
And Vanderbilt has great care.
Oh,
the nurses are wonderful. This is not anything against them.
It was just they're trauma hospital for
they had some kind of storms that.
Oh, yeah, there was storms. Yes, which is why I didn't go straight up there on Monday, was because of the storm.
Yeah, it was something really crazy. But I remember driving into Nashville and calling Julie, because she at least still had her phone. I'm like, hey, I'm here. Do you want me to bring your stuff in? She goes, well, I'm in a hallway and there is nowhere for you to be. Like, it's so small. Like, they could barely get anyone. Like, they had...
It was two gurney. The hallway was two gurneys wide. And so I was one gurney.
And then the other side was where they were walking and going.
And pushing gurneys through as more ambulances are coming. Because there are ambulances, I mean, all throughout Tennessee, North Alabama. Because that's the closest trauma hospital other than Huntsville.
Right.
Which is why Huntsville's always an 8-hour wait. Is because
they're a trauma center.
It's a trauma center because the next closest one is Birmingham.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either until I'm sitting and I finally was talking to my nurse and she's like, yeah, this is the trauma hospital for most until you get to Memphis or Knoxville. So anything in between those
or Lexington.
Two, yeah. Go to Nashville, to Vanderbilt. So, yeah, it was, the ambulances don't stop coming.
It was quite, so.
Anyways, it was quite the adventure.
Well, tell us a little bit more about, like, is this the kind of cancer that can go in remission or, like, where are we from here, I guess? I mean, just to be totally.
Yeah, transparent. Yeah. So, to be honest, I am struggling mentally I wouldn't say I'm depressed, but I am really struggling with finding my place of where I don't even know how to put it into words because it doesn't necessarily make logical sense. But there's a side of me is like, I could be gone tomorrow or I could be gone in 20 years. I don't know, which I totally get. We all know that. But part of me just feels like I have a death sentence on me because there is no remission. There is no cure for this cancer. The way that I'm supposed to answer somebody if I am asked, do you have cancer, is yes, I have cancer, but I'm in the state of no evidence of disease, which just does not make logical sense to me in my brain, because that to me means that you're in remission. And she tried to explain it to me.
No, but you're... It's not.
But I'm not, because I still have the cancer in my system.
Yep. Your cells are still there.
Yes.
And I think that's why you're still struggling, because you're like, not that it, someone has said it out loud to you.
Right.
You know, okay, you're going to die. We all know we're going to die.
Yes.
Was it life? Birth, death, and taxes.
Those are all the given.
Nobody's getting out of this alive.
Right.
And
exactly.
We all know that in the back of our head, but we don't think about
different.
It. We don't think about it.
Don't.
And this has put it right in front of your face, and you're thinking about it every day because not only are you recovering, you're still feeling effects.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and this cancer does come back. It's just there's people that doesn't come back for 12, 15, 14 years. There's people that doesn't come back for 3 months. I mean, there's a wide variety of individuals. And according to my original oncologist, as well as my surgical oncologist, this cancer comes back, bottom line. You just don't know when. So you're monitored. So I'll get scans again in October and pray for no evidence of disease. And, I'll get scans in the first of 2024 sometime in the first quarter. And it just varies.
This is your new
Yes.
Life, and, your right. new routine.
Yes. And so she said to me, like, everything I'm feeling is completely normal because I'm dealing with what's considered a chronic illness now. And anyone with a chronic illness kind of goes through this emotional roller coaster. So at least her saying that made me feel better. But mentally, I think it's now, since I've recovered physically pretty well, mentally, it's just still a battle.
It's catching up.
Yeah.
It's like grieving. You know, you have your stages.
Yes. And that's exactly what she said, is you're going to have the stages. It's going to vary. It's something new that, you know, you have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of remember going through that a little bit after my heart surgery. But I was telling my husband that, you know, with the heart surgery, it was something mechanical that was wrong. Mm-hmm. So I didn't feel as emotionally, like, I felt like there was something that could be done about it, which they did as much as they could. But I still have a quote unquote chronic illness with my heart. Now I have a chronic illness that I can't do anything about. Mm-hmm. I can't fix it. I can't get rid of it. I can't do anything about it. So that, I think, is where it's different between the two. Mm-hmm.
There's no like real finish line.
Right.
It keeps moving on you.
Yes.
You're like, well, I've ran the 50 yards.
That's right.
And you're like, oh no, it's a mile long race. And you're like,
yeah,
well, okay. And then you get to the mile and they're like, oh, it's a 10K. And
yeah.
You're like, well, crap.
Oh, like, oh, it's you're a like, marathon.
Well,
oh,
crap. So, I mean, that's, I've heard, you know, not just chronic illness. It's like kind of described that way. It's like, it's just a, not only is it like you're constantly thinking about like right here and then everything keeps changing.
Right.
And then like, who knows, like Catherine or Lauren might say something and you're like, oh, I didn't think about that. Or,
right.
Or why is she thinking about that? You know, like, it just brings up, because they're going through it in a different manner.
Right. They're going through it in a sense of grief, almost, is how they're traveling through this journey. Hmm. And they, you know, my youngest doesn't know how to express herself when it comes to that. So she has a really hard time. She's the one that actually made me start thinking about the whole no remission, no cure, and some of her comments. When we took her to the doctor asked, you know, any family history changes in medical, whatever. And like, yes, I have cancer. And then after the doctor leaves, Catherine's like, you don't have cancer anymore. Why'd you say you have cancer? You know, because in her mind, it's gone. I had the surgery. It's over. Mm. But yeah. And, you know, the next, depending on how it comes back and when it comes back, I could have the surgery again. It's very common to have it a second time, which.
Oh, it is common.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. And if anyone says NG tube to me again, I think I'm going to smack them.
Hopefully they'll figure out something different.
No kidding.
With the.
That thing was awful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Not like that.
No, I think I was the resident's worst patient they'd ever have with an NG tube.
No, I doubt that. But it was funny because when you were like, they thought they were taking it out that day.
Yeah, they were like, supposed to take it out on and like you were Saturday.
Like, yeah, you were like, you're gonna put me out, right? And the nurse just looks to me like, and I'm like, oh, you know, you could tell she did not want to tell you. She knew how you felt about it. And she was like, no, we're not. And your eyes just went, what? You're like, what? Wait, come again. Because well, like, I'm going to kick you.
It's like when the resident came in, when I ended up in the ER again, and he came down to see me at Vanderbilt. And he's like, okay, so the typical, you know, routine for an ileus is we're going to put an NG tube in and give you fluids. And I looked at him. And I was like, no, you're not. You're not putting an NG tube in. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, that's protocol. That's what we need to do. And it's like, no, you get on the phone to Dr. McGee, you go back with your other residents and you all powwow, whatever you need to do, but you are not putting another NG tube into me. And if you absolutely have to, you better put me to sleep. And he was like freaking out. His eyes bulged out. And he was like, I don't know what to say to this poor patient. This lady is not going to let me touch her with an NG tube.
No. And you were And it was a good thing because you didn't really need it. So that
no,
was good.
They were able to get, they gave me a different type of fluid to try to wake it up, and they were able to get it woken up without an NG tube.
And, so in that whole scenario, I picture this kid to be like 24, 25.
Oh, yeah.
And you pull out that mom voice. No, you will not.
That's exactly it.
And it was like when I was in the hospital the first time, when she came out to finally take the NG tube out on Monday or Tuesday, when they were supposed to take it out on Saturday, but there was still too much back, whatever.
Backwash.
I know. The NG tube is a suction. I didn't know that until this whole thing. But anyways, that's a whole nother story. And she was like, well, I'll make a deal with you and then I'll take it out. And so she, I don't even remember what the deal was. I was still out of it. But I was like,
I think she was going to get you something.
Yeah, if I didn't do something,
if you don't get
if I don't eat or drink so much or something, she was going. Oh, I think it was supposed I had to stay on just popsicles for the day or something like that. And if I didn't listen to her, she was going to put it back in or something. You know? Or if I threw up or something, she was going to put it back in. I'm like, yeah, just get the damn thing out. Whatever you want. You want $1 million? Sure. I don't care. Get this damn thing out of me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It was
so.
I think whenever we put this up, mm-hmm. we should put the link to Dr. McGee's video about
your surgery. That's a good idea.
Because it's on YouTube.
It was really helpful to understand what you were going to go through.
Yeah, it was. I just love her to death because she actually listens to me. Mm-hmm. You know, her residents, of course, are all trained by the book. So they're going by the book and what protocol is and this and that. And she knows my history of nausea and vomiting. And, you know, she's like, no, we don't need the NG tube for her. She'll be okay. You know, but yeah.
Yeah.
She's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Well, I guess. Do we have anything else we need to add about why we were gone? I mean, no.
What do you had going on?
Nothing. I've been dealing with you guys' crap.
She's been our support.
She really has.
I was like, I've been through both of y'all's stuff. So there we go. Well,
she gets the phone calls from both of us. But, you know, how's it going? Da, 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 and all this. Asking for advice. But I think that. Maybe in the next episode we can talk a little bit about like how are we trying to get back into the swing of things
and
you know, a new norm, whatever it is,
right?
And I hope some of our listeners let us know, you know,
give what's us some going tips.
On yeah because we are at that point where we are like, we have been on hiatus, we haven't, especially you, Julie.
I haven't
been doing much of anything. And, mm-hmm. you know, the other thing is the elevators at Lo Mill are out. So we've been doing stuff differently with her, Stephanie's classes and painting. And so it's just been a crazy summer.
God, that's well, a really nutty summer.
I know. And, you know, so many people say that they dive into their art for therapy reasons, for healing and stuff. And I've had the opposite. It has been so hard. I don't even know why. It makes no sense to me why it's been so hard to force myself to do something. So I'm like taking these little classes on. Just this last week, I started doing some classes online at Skillshare and 21 Draw and just trying to get my brain thinking along the lines of wanting to create. Mm-hmm. And the weird part is not wanting to create what I've been creating and stuff like that. So
I know for me, it's been trying to get my mind to settle to where I can't focus on the art.
And that may be what it is. Yeah.
I can't get it to settle.
You're thinking not at all about art.
Right.
And you're like, you've turned your whole thing upside down.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, what am I doing now? And I think right now you're doing some of the best work you've ever done.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Oh, and I love your story work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm liking the story work, but that it does. It takes a lot of quiet time to either even figure out mm-hmm. what you want to do with like what kind of story am I thinking here and the imagery and all that. And in order to do that, you have to settle.
Right.
Settle down.
Right. Exactly.
And with all the things that are going on, that's really, really hard.
Yeah.
So I think this is like the third quarter or fourth quarter here in the year is like a total restart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
who knows what's going to come now, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Just make it easy, please.
Yes.
Make it easy.
Exactly. I know. I'm like, I can't. You know, I just lost my mom 3 years ago, and then I'm dealing with this. And my son's graduating. I'm same boat as Stephanie. Is my daughter is looking at colleges, and she'll be a senior next year and graduating. And it's just like, it's crazy. I'm like, can I just have some good vibes for 5 to 10 years now? Like, I don't.
I saw real quick. I saw a meme that said, I need a week vacation to deep clean my house. I need a week vacation to like cook in the kitchen and not make it like, leave it, like just leave the mess and have someone else clean it up. I need a week vacation to sleep.
Yeah.
I need a week vacation and like divided it all up of all the things we need to do. And I'm like, it's September and you know, it's Christmas.
Yeah.
Right.
Basically we're talking like, so we're hoping that this year ends much more peacefully than it has like stirred up.
Yeah. So. I know this has been an insane year.
So, all right, guys, well, let us know how your year has been going, and let us know if you're having to restart or refocus. So that would be some great tips for us. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Artists Soar,
a podcast for artists by artists. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at hello@artistsoar.com.
And be sure to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts so that you can get more of us and we can bring in some sponsors to help you and help us.